Welcome to The Fix, the podcast made for the trades, where we sit down with inspiring individuals across the trades to discuss their unique take on the industry, including career paths, job site stories, overcoming challenges, and everything in between. I'm your host, Catherine, a marketer here at Odie, with my co-host and friend, Doug, one of Odie's resident experts in all things trades. The Fix is more than a podcast. It's a community built to support tradespeople and inspire the next generation of essential pros. Let's start the conversation. All right, Doug, I was just saying it's been a long time since we've had a guest actually in our studio, and we've got some local representation bringing back probably one of my most favorite classes. So now I'm kind of dating myself because classes like this did happen when I was growing up, but like my kids don't have the opportunity to do it.
Yes, I love the local flavor we're bringing in-house today. It's so exciting. Plus, we get to showcase Odie University.
Yes.
You know, which our audience doesn't really get to see much of, but they're always welcome to come in, you know, if they're in town. Today's guest is just another home run, Catherine.
Yep. Like
I said, hometown favorite. They're bringing back shop class, right? Woo! That's their big saying. I love that. I also love their websites. I encourage everybody to see it because they have the 1972 Honda CB. Am I right on that one, Brian? Nice.
68, 69, 70, okay. 71, 72, okay. 73, all of them.
Yeah. Nice. So I used to love going out on Sundays and taking a motorcycle drive. And then...
Oh, wait, something I didn't know about you. You used to have a motorcycle?
I did.
I need a picture.
But when I had kids, my wife said, whoop, motorcycles out the door. So, and then we used to have, and I hope we can expand on this a little bit, we used to have a movie called The Magnificent Seven.
Yeah.
Well, based on how this whole thing got started, I refer to them as the Magnificat Six.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
Okay. So, and then Moto, I'm sitting here thinking about Moto, and I'm like, you know, how can I remember Moto? And so I gave it as an acronym, and I said, multiple opportunities that offer great outcomes.
Look at that.
Wow. So I am so excited to ahead and listen to Brian's story.
Well, welcome, Brian Chaffron, the head coach, founder of Moto Go.
Thank you.
All right, let's dive in because I think Doug gave some of it away, but can you tell us about Moto Go and what inspired you to start this program?
Moto Go is essentially shop class, but it's rebranded a little bit. As you know, shop class has been disappearing everywhere for a multitude of reasons, which I don't know if we're going into that during this podcast, but one of the most important parts of bringing shop class back was the hook.
Right.
And if I went into a school and said, hey, who wants to learn how to build a birdhouse or build a clock, we wouldn't get any kids raising their hands. But if I roll a motorcycle through the hallway into the cafeteria,
yeah,
now I've got every kid's attention. And when I say, who wants to build a motorcycle, I've got all the hands up. So it occurred to me that while shop class is necessary, it needed to be, you know, jazzed up a little bit. So
exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that was the only motorcycle at the time that I knew how to work on. And it's small, it's cheap, it's prevalent.
Mm-hmm.
Honda made a trillion of them back in the 60s and 70s. And so I kind of rolled with that and just figured that kids today need to know how to use tools and they need to know how to fail and do it the wrong way 10 times and then do it the right way. So now they know why it's the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And I was teaching at St. Martin de Porres High School. And we did this thing called Wonder Week, where every adult in the building for 1 week got to teach their passion instead of
subject
they were hired to teach. So there were things like calligraphy, knitting, model rockets, cooking.
Yeah.
All kinds of things. And I had three old Hondas, and I decided I was going to bring all three into this little unused garage space at the school, and I would take 12 kids and we would tear them down and put them back together. They would see how engines work.
Mm-hmm.
And immediately everything got ruined. They broke the tools because they'd never used them. They stripped all the screws because they'd never used the tool. They stripped all the nuts and bolts because they'd never used a ratchet or a wrench. And I was distraught.
Yeah.
Because there was shop class when I was in school, but I didn't take it. My dad would not let me. My dad was as handy as a dad could be, but he was like, you're going to college. And stoners and flunkies are in shop class, and you are not taking shop class. So I never got to take it, but my dad had a basement full of tools, so I was always playing with those tools and sneaking, you know, and he would get pissed because we were touching his tools.
That's so true.
But I knew what they did.
Yeah, yep.
And these kids, unfortunately, did not. And after it got done, there was 1,000 screws and bolts on the floor, and everything was ruined, and nothing got put back together, and I had to take a snow shovel and shovel it into the trunk of my car and take these bikes in a million pieces back to my house and spend a year putting it together.
Oh, my gosh.
And I walked out of that like, man, I was so excited for Wonder Week, and I just failed. I ruined, not only did I ruin these bikes, but I wasted these kids' time. But then over the rest of the semester, those kids were totally changed, and they were participating in class, and they were signing up for after school activities, and they were sticking around, and their attendance got better, and they started treating the teachers differently. And that's when I realized that for the first time in these kids' lives, they learned by using their hands. And it wasn't sitting in front of a whiteboard.
Right.
And it wasn't all abstract. And it was at that moment that I knew that someday I was going to have to do something about this. And I left teaching, and I opened a community access motorcycle garage called Skidmark Garage. And after that had been running for a year or two, and talking with a couple other guys that do a similar kind of thing, but it's a wood shop called Soulcraft, we used to sit and just go, you know, run through our brains, like, how can we bring woodworking? How can we bring mechanics back to school? And we spent a year, 2 years just talking about it and dreaming about it. And then finally, I was like, I'm just going to do it. And I started a nonprofit with my wife, and she took the lead as the executive director. And she has gotten us into all the schools, and she has promoted us, and she has gotten, she's gotten everything.
Right.
Like, and then she just tells me, you go to this school and you teach your curriculum. And it's great. It's changing. Every kid that we get in contact with is better off for it.
Yeah. So walk me through a little bit that timeline. So how long has the program been in existence that you've been actually in schools and teaching?
I think the first school that we got into, the first legit school, I think, was Magnificat High School. And that was in 2019. And, you know, that was, even though I'd been a teacher for 10 years, I didn't really understand the power of girls. I knew that as a teacher, boys learn differently than girls. And the girls, boys were a pain, and girls generally weren't. But it wasn't until I got into an all-girls school that I found out that girls are better at every damn thing on the planet. Better at listening, better at trying, better at caring, better at doing the work, better at performing, better at everything. And it changed. Like, if it were up to me, I would be in nothing but girls' schools. Because if girls got to be, if they weren't shunned from all these trades, the trades would be, there'd never be a mistake. And if there was, they would learn so much from it. And they just do everything so well. And if all of our mechanics, if there were girls mixed in every garage fixing cars.
Yeah.
Not only would women not be scared to go into a mechanic.
Absolutely.
But the work would be done so well.
Yeah.
And it's just a screaming shame that men have kept women out of these kinds of things.
Well, I'll tell you, we've got a whole list of organizations that are trying to change that. And some that we've met in every state. West Virginia Women Work, Vermont Works for Women, Chicago Women in the Trades. You can find a group of women that are mentoring, making sure they're helping, taking down those barriers and those blocks, which is awesome, because there is too little, especially in the trades of plumbing, something like 3%. Or women. And so, you know, really letting other women know that they can get into the trades and that there will be other women in there. But we only do that by everyone, you know, starting to help with that stigma and doing the work to change. So I think it's awesome. And I think starting off and getting into some of these schools so that they can really see what it's like. And I don't know if I would have ever felt like, working on a motorcycle, but I think that would have been so cool to be able to have that opportunity to understand how engine works. So yeah. I think that's phenomenal. So talk a little bit about, you know, the mission, you know, to teach kids problem solving through motorcycles. Why motorcycles? I know you kind of said because they're readily available, but why that sort of skill and trade?
When we get into a school and I introduce the class to the students on that first day, the first day is all about getting to know each other, and we don't touch any tools, we don't touch any motorcycles, we don't even talk about the motorcycles, because the mission is so much more about getting to be comfortable with failing and understanding that it is the failures that, you know, everyone says, oh, you've got to fail before you succeed, but we kind of believe that failing is the success, and so many people are scared to fail that they don't try anything.
Yep.
And people are scared to fail because it's embarrassing.
Mm-hmm.
So we build this rapport up on that first day of, and I tell them, you will be failing nonstop. And in fact, you will only get an A if you are failing.
Mm-hmm.
And they look at me like I'm an alien because no one tells them that.
No, especially in school where it's like, unless you're getting an A, then, you know, a lot of kids these days think that they're failing.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And the fear of getting an F.
Right.
So this is all about failing without the F. And so we really hammer that home, and to the point where after classes, the students get the iPad out and they make a little 30-second video describing their best failure for the day.
Mm.
And by the end of the semester, the idea of failing has been spoken of so many times that it's no longer this horrible thing that they're afraid of. And the motorcycle works really well because it's also visible.
Mm-hmm. Tangible.
Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas like with a car, especially a new car, you've got that plastic cover over the engine. You can't even see the spark plugs. You can't see the dipstick.
Mm-hmm.
With a motorcycle, the engine is on display. It's all like naked there, and it's just begging to be played with.
Mm-hmm.
And we use these old school climber manuals that were written in the 70s. Written by men for men that are already mechanics. So there's not great step-by-step descriptions.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you know, I'm like, okay, our first step, our first major goal is removing the engine. So let's go to the part of the book that talks about removing the engine. And it just says, remove the seat, remove the tank. That's step one. Step two, remove the air covers or the air filters and the air covers. And the students are like,
wow. What's an air cover?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And some of them don't even know what the tank is.
Yeah.
So at first, I was like, oh, this book sucks. This is the worst. It's not giving them what they need to know in order to do it. And then after a while, I realized, no, this is providing so many opportunities for problem mm-hmm. solving and for failure, because none of the coaches, I specifically asked the coaches, do not tell the students what the answer is. Just stand back and make sure they don't get hurt.
Sure.
And the students will spend the first hour just looking at every angle of the seat and the tank to figure out where it's connected to the frame. And they'll take a million things off that don't need to be taken off in order to get that seat off. And they make all these mistakes along the way. And then they get the seat off and they're like, oh, it was just this. We didn't need to take off the shocks. I'm like, yeah, no kidding. We didn't need to take off the shocks.
Yeah. So how do you make sure that things don't end up into 1,000 pieces again? I'm sure you've learned your lesson of kind of at least how to guide them somewhat to.
So we provide them with little, we call them tackle boxes, but it's just a flip open clear container with a bunch of dividers in it.
A caboodle.
I know, right? Don't you remember caboodles?
No.
No.
Your wife does ask her about her caboodles.
All right. And then we give them a Sharpie and we make them label each little
great.
Square.
Stay so organized. They have
to write the name of the part and keep all the fasteners and those things so that when they rebuild it, they've got it all labeled. And that's an ideal world, but everybody knows you don't always label everything.
Right.
So then they learn the lesson the hard way, and they learn at the end that there's a major failure when they can't figure out what goes where. And it sucks because if they don't get the bike finished, they don't get to kickstart the bike that they built. We always bring one, because I would say 7 out of 10 times the students do not finish their bike to the point where it will start.
Hmm.
They get it 90-95% of the way, but there's no time to troubleshoot, and maybe some electrical isn't hooked up right. So we bring a bike that's ready, and it's the exact same bike, and they get to jump on that and kickstart it. But the failure of, and it's heartbreaking to watch the students struggle the entire semester with every little bit and be as attentive as they think mm-hmm. they can be. And then they don't finish it because they didn't label things correctly, or they lost parts, or they broke parts and we didn't know it or something.
Right.
But, and as hard as it is to watch that, I really think that that failure is so important for them to experience, because it's such a safe place to have that mm-hmm. failure. And yep. there's no life-changing repercussions of that failure. They're
right.
not going to not be able to go to something because it didn't start. And sometimes there's tears, and it's really hard to watch, but it's fabulous for them to experience it. And I've talked to those students who are going through college now and mechanical
yeah.
engineering degrees, and they're like, yeah, that taught me an absolute ton.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. Well, why don't you give us a success story of one of your students? Do you have one that sticks in your mind?
I do. There was a student that I had just probably 16 students working on four bikes, and it was crazy. They were all probably 9th or 10th graders, and it was mayhem, and they just wanted to tear these bikes apart as fast as they could. You know, the boys always like to compete. And
always.
Yeah. And the girls do too, but it's a different kind of
totally.
Weird competition. The boy came to me, this boy named Joseph, and he said, Mr., what step is next? And I kind of looked at the bike, and I said, I think you're on step 9, but I'm not sure. Bring me the book. And he brought me the book, and I went to the proper page, and I pointed to, like, I think it was step 10. And I was like, all right, this is what you got to do next. And he took the book, and he looked at me, and he said, I don't know how to read. And my heart just sunk, but I didn't want to show him how bummed I was. So I just read him the step. I was like, all right. And I read him 10, and I read him step 11, and gave him the book, and he went and he took care of it. And then I was, you know, helping all the other students, and I kind of dismissed it, kind of forgot about it. And then next week we had that class again, and I show up for class because, you know, I'm traveling from school to school
sure.
all day long. And I got to that school, and I walked into the classroom, and there was a woman sitting in there waiting for me. And I flicked on the lights, and there's this woman sitting there, and she gets up and she runs over and she gives me a hug. And I was like, who are you?
Yeah. Hi.
Yeah. And she's already crying.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, geez.
And she said, I have been chasing Joseph to come to my remedial reading for 2 years. And he runs and hides from me. He knows when I'm looking for him, and he hides in bathrooms around the school, and I've never been able to get him into my remedial reading, extra help, tutoring.
Right.
And she said, but then 3 days ago, he sought me out and said, Miss, I need to learn how to read because I got to build a motorcycle.
Oh.
And she was, you know, bawling.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
And then, you know, and then I was crying, and because that was, I never had the words for it, but I knew
yeah.
that this was going to happen.
Yeah.
I knew that the fire of learning by using your hands would prompt kids to take those mm-hmm. steps. I just knew it, but I couldn't tell that story until it happened.
Until it happened.
Yeah. And
yeah.
then it was like, oh, I know that I'm on the right track.
I love it.
Yeah. Story.
Well, we've noticed too that as we've attended some of the STEM events and activities, and we're working with kids that are from middle school and sometimes high school, and we'll ask them, hey, do you want to participate in, you know, drilling in a washing machine outlet box, or do you want to hammer out a knockout? And they kind of look at you a little bit, and then you can tell, like, do you know how to use a hammer? And a lot of it's, no, I've never picked one up before. And it's really then giving them just some of that guidance of how to use a tool for the first time that, hey, think about a lot of them, if they don't have a dad's basement where they can sneak and touch the tools, they don't really have a place where they can go and understand how to pick up a hammer or how to safely drill or how to remove a screw from something that for them will be really life lessons as they continue to grow and get an apartment sometime, yep. get a house sometime, that they know how to do that stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, I can't tell you how many times throughout my career I had people work for me that actually did not know how to read a tape measure when they came to work for me. And, you know, you're like...
That's a tricky one, though.
Yeah. So, you know, you work through it, you teach them and stuff, but it is amazing to me that you run into, you know, individuals that haven't experienced, you know, how to do something properly.
Yeah.
I researched your website. I found so many things on there wonderful, and... I referred to them as the Magnificat Six. And I just want to point out before I ask you a question that I saw all of them give updates on where they are today. Okay. And what I want to point out is you have six young ladies. One of them didn't even want this class. She tried to avoid this class completely, right?
I love it.
Every one of them is on their way to such successful career paths, and they all base it on the fact that they had that opportunity to learn about the mechanics, right? Mm-hmm. And the teamwork and the collaboration. And the one young lady who didn't even want to do it, she's into cancer research, for goodness sakes, right? Yeah. I mean, she is, wow, superhuman. So I just want to point that out that, you know, sometimes you might want to resist something, but our audience should know, give it a shot because it may be life-changing for you. Yeah. Now, speaking of life-changing, so you have a lot of females that are in your class, and I see that, you know, you have a mix of young men in there also. Can you tell me how long it takes before that segregation comes together and then they don't look at each other as male and female and they look at each other as a teammate during this process?
That's a great question.
That is a great question.
I stayed up last night thinking of that.
Yeah.
I would say it's quicker than you think. I think the curriculum to tear down and rebuild a motorcycle is about 40 hours. And I would guess that it only takes 4 or 5 hours before a team stops seeing each other as different and they see each other as just teammates.
Okay.
Because from the get-go, the boys walk in with an attitude that they know what the tools are and they know how to use them. Mm-hmm. And the girls walk in with, I don't know what these are. Please tell me.
Mm-hmm.
And so things are kind of weird for the first couple hours because the boys are trying to show off when in fact they don't know what they're doing, but they're afraid to ask.
Sure.
And the girls are not afraid to ask. And so it only takes a couple hours before the boys see that the girls have asked and now they're doing things the correct way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the boys are like, oh, I need to just be honest.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. And stop trying to show off. And then they start asking questions. And then they start depending on the girls for the help. And they stop seeing each other as different. And they see each other as equals as they're building the motorcycle.
And that life lesson alone is huge. Yep. I mean, really, you know, and that's a lot of when you get the gender barrier that happens on the job site. I mean, yeah. Having classes and opportunities where you know, hey, I've worked side by side a woman and a girl, and I know that she can do it just as well as I have, and that's a big step.
Well, I think one of the biggest things that your organization provides is that safe place where I'm allowed to fail and I'm not going to be judged for it. And as I read and learned about your organization, I think there's so many things, but I think that is the top of the tier on what you most provide for these young folks. So I applaud you for that.
Thank you. And so, I never thought about that whole, your question and the fact that they will take that to a job site and be able to think back to when they worked for the first time with
side by side
with a woman. I never thought about that. That really makes me happy to know that I'm having some kind of positive influence on that. That's great.
Yeah.
Yep.
Absolutely. So let's talk a little bit about, we talked policy and that type of stuff, but, you know, how can schools, policymakers, industry leaders, you know, help remove some of the barriers for marginalized communities in trades education and in with shop? You know, what are some of the things that you would like to see that schools can do or even policymakers to make it so that shop class is more accessible?
I mean, I guess the simple answer is just bring it back.
Bring it back. Yeah.
And I will know that MotoGo has been successful when we can no longer get schools because they have their own shop classes and we are no longer needed. We don't have to fill that because every school has brought it back.
Mm-hmm.
That would be wonderful.
Yeah.
I don't know if it takes lobbying the, you know, state government, the state board of education to bring it back. I really think that some of the reasons it left is the testing. If you don't have to successfully take a test to graduate that involves shop class, then shop class gets eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
And insurance.
Mm-hmm.
insurance companies charge $1 million to have a kid hold a tool. And I think there's the stigma. You know, it's unfortunate. We had this gigantic push from the 70s and 80s and 90s that every single student has to go to college, and college is the definition of success. Mm-hmm. And those that can't, go to shop class. That's right. Just the way that was drilled into my head my whole life.
Right.
And it's a horrible stigma that is completely untrue.
Yeah.
And I think those three things need to be attacked from multiple angles on each issue. I don't know exactly how to do that except to just do the work and to get the shop class going and let someone else that's interested in lobbying and someone that's interested in trying to convince the insurance industry to chill. And hopefully there's someone that wants to do that. It's not me.
Yeah.
I really like being in the classroom.
Yeah, you want to be with us. That's where you want to be. So tell me a little bit about how many classrooms is your organization in today, and what do you do in the summers?
At the moment, we have, I think, 13 programs.
Okay.
Some middle schools, lots of high schools, lots of private schools. It's notoriously harder to get into a public school because they, you know, have a problem justifying people's tax money to pay people that aren't their employees.
Mm-hmm.
Totally understandable. So it's a little harder to get into the public schools. We are in some, and we will continue to try to get into as many as we can, but it's a lot easier to get into the private schools, like the private Catholic schools and
right. The
downtown. One of the best programs I think we have currently is, we just refer to it as the county program.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the kids that are in the county juvenile system, and their community service hours will be spent building motorcycles.
Wow.
So they come in every Saturday morning, all winter long. And instead of picking up trash on the side of the freeway, they prep our bikes and they prep our engines so that they are ready to go for us to take them to the next school. And while we tell them, Yeah, you're helping this nonprofit. You're helping us prep these engines. All we're doing is running the program.
Right.
The same way we run it at every school, whether that school is a wealthy school or mm-hmm. A disadvantaged school. And those kids, they're by and large boys. I would say 80% of them are boys.
Sure.
And they come in with the same attitude of they know how to do things. But then within seconds, they turn off that attitude and they cannot believe that there is some grown-up handing them tools and saying, just try it. Just do it.
Yeah.
Go ahead and ruin it. It doesn't matter. I'm trusting you to figure this out.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see that you can solve problems. And at the end of that 3 hours, they are arguing with each other on who did more work, who did better work.
Yeah.
And there's usually someone that kind of, and they're all strangers to each other. And we'll put three of them on the bike, and within minutes, one of them rises as the leader and who has paid the most attention to what needs to be done, and they can direct the other two as they're doing their own.
Yeah.
And that person usually comes to one of us at the end and says, I want to do this.
How do I get into it?
How do I get into this? And that's the most rewarding.
I mean, I bet.
Every school is rewarding, but that one, the evidence of learning is so in your face, and it is so immediate. And sometimes we only see those kids once. They'll come on a Saturday, and then the next Saturday, the county brings another 12 kids, and we don't get to see the same ones over. But some of them come back. Some of them, when they're done with their service hours, continue to show up.
Oh, my gosh.
Because they love it.
They have fun. Gives them a purpose, something to come do on a Saturday morning.
Yeah. It's fabulous.
That is really cool.
Yeah, how cool is that?
And then they become a big summer program. And when summer hits, we get the county kids from 9 till noon every single day of the week for like 8 weeks.
Okay.
And then we also work with a whole bunch of other nonprofits and do some free like one-day programming where we have them work at stations and we'll bring Girl Scouts in or there's another program called Queen I Am, and this woman has all these little girls from ages 5 to probably 15, and we divide them all up, and they do stations for like 5 minutes a station. They learn how to hammer. They learn how to use a saw. They learn things that are totally unrelated to motorcycles, but still learning with their hands.
Right.
So the summer is pretty much spent not getting any money. You know, it's all free programming.
Sure.
Whereas during the school year, the schools are paying for this, and we're getting foundations to help. But during the summer, it's all paid for by foundations that love what we're doing, and we're just doing tons of free programming. Sometimes it's a one-day thing. Sometimes it's a one-week thing. And then we're looking to bring our students to other places like this.
Like go to university.
Like go to university and let them experience another way of working with their hands.
Yeah.
So we'll be doing that this summer quite a bit. That's hopefully awesome. We'll see a lot of you.
That's great. Well, and that kind of leads me into kind of my next question, which is what's the best way for our listeners to support the work, whether it's financial, volunteering, or spreading the word?
I think if you go to the website, you can contact any or all of us and discuss how you want to
get
help.
Involved.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's great. Well, I learned a ton, and we've always talked about shop class and how important it would be that it's back. And I love, you know, your vision of, I know my work is done when I'm not needed anymore, is really powerful. And I think that's a really great message. And while I hope for that, I also hope that you get to continue to make really good impacts on many, many kids here in this Cleveland area. And who knows where it can go next. I think a lot of people could adopt to this type of methodology and work. So thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for
having coming me. In and seeing us. And we're looking forward to hopefully hosting you and some of your students here at OD University during the summer.
Love
it. It's great.